Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now we're going to talk about the evolution delusion, a scientific study of creation and evolution. Stand by next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest. Dr. Bo Kirkwood is a board-certified family physician in Pasadena, Texas, where he has practiced for 32 years. He's on the faculty of two medical schools in Houston, the great Baylor College of Medicine and the University of Texas Health Science Center of Houston. Dr. Kirkwood is an elder at the Parkview Church of Christ and has lectured on evolution and creation for many years. He's a contributing author to Truth Magazine as well. We're talking about his latest work called The Evolution Delusion. And Dr. Bro, I'm looking forward to this one. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate you letting me talk about this.
Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in this, you know, a family physician into evolution. Fascinating. How'd you get tied into that?
Well, like a lot of the high school students, I was taught evolution going through high school, and it was taught as absolute fact. I remember the teacher saying, it's no longer debated. We know that it's fact. I didn't really totally believe that, but I went to University of Houston pre-med and took a course there called Population Genetics and Evolution. And at the beginning of that course, the professor, who's a PhD degree professor, made an interesting statement that I had not heard from too many people of his caliber make. And that is, the molecules to man evolution, you're not going to get taught in this class. He said that belongs in a philosophy class, not a science class. What he was talking about was evolution within populations, which I would call adaptation or variation within species. So that got me to studying it a whole lot more. And what I began to realize is that the whole foundation of evolution, and I'm talking about basically what I would refer to as a molecules to man evolution theory, is really a philosophy. There's very, very little science behind it. Meager evidence supports the molecules to man evolution. There's a lot of science that supports variation within kinds. That's not evolution. Evolution doesn't do a good job of explaining how life began. And so that got me to studying it over the course of my college career and then in medical school as well. The more I studied, the more I learned, and I decided to kind of take it up as a topic that I would like to lecture about. And I've been doing that for about the last 30 years now.
Good for you. Do you find it controversial?
Yeah, it is controversial. First of all, people that believe like I am, especially if they're scientists or medical personnel, they just accept evolution.
Yeah.
They don't question it. I remember in medical school talking to some students, some fellow classmates of mine, said, "Well, of course you believe in evolution." Well, no, I don't. The deal is, most scientists that are not directly involved in evolutionary type sciences don't really take the time to look at the quote unquote science behind evolution. And when I explained that to some of my classmates, it at least made them question it. Wouldn't say I convinced them about it, but it is controversial because, again, most of the scientific community accepts evolution.
Yeah, they sure do. And it's very difficult to get them to change their minds. Now,
almost impossible a lot of times because their mind is already made up. But if you do get someone that has an open mind that can look at the evidence, because that's what I base what I believe on. I don't mind saying I'm a Christian, but as far as evolution is concerned, I want to look at the scientific evidence because I think Christianity really is a logical religion when you think about it. It's based upon logic, not just about the way you feel. So when you really look at the evidence that's there to support the beginnings of life occurring through evolution, it's just really not there.
So you're saying Darwin had well intentions here, but that he fell short?
Well, I think Darwin's intentions, and if you read the book on Origin of Species, what he's talking about in that book is really variation within species. Species, and I like to use the word kind because species can be defined many different ways. I'd rather use the word kind. what Darwin was looking at. In fact, his book was based upon domestic animals. When we think it was all based upon his voyage on the Beagle and going to the Galapagos Islands. Mm-hmm. That's true. He did that, and he saw the changes in the finches, but the finches are never even mentioned in his book. He looks at domesticated animals and livestock and looks at the various breeds that you see in those animals. And then he took that to a more naturalistic point of view on the Galapagos Islands, and could see that the changes in the beak size and the change in the size of the animals was based upon the animals that they were eating at on the various islands. So the idea of survival of the fittest, that sort of thing, explained how variations occurred within species. But where I think Darwin messed up is he then took that theory that really explains variation within kind, and he then said, well, that could also be how life began. In his book, he talks about possibly there could be a little pond with some, you know, certain chemicals in it, and wouldn't it be nice if that pond was maybe struck by a lightning bolt and then life would begin out of that pond. He obviously had no proof of that. But he carried, in my opinion, he carried his theory a little bit too far. And, of course, modern scientists now have taken that and run with it.
Well, they sure have. And if Darwin were alive today, Doctor, what do you think he'd be saying about what we know now about all of this? Would he change his mind?
I don't know if he would change his mind. I know one thing, that in Darwin's lifetime, Darwin was looking for fossil evidence of evolution, because, you know, Darwin's theory requires that changes to occur that we create a new kind would have to take a very, very, very long time. He understood that it would take a very long time for that to happen, and that should be found within the fossil record through transitional forms. Darwin knew that those transitional forms were not there during his lifetime. He suspected that eventually those transitional forms in the fossil record would be found. They've really never been found. 150 years after the writing of his book, they've never been found. Now, what Darwin did not know, Darwin had no concept of genetics, really. Genetics was just getting started during Darwin's lifetime. Even though Frederick Mendel was a contemporary of him, there wasn't a lot of a sharing of information during that time. And he had no concept of genetics, and he certainly had no concept of biochemistry. And I think it's possible that if he saw the tremendous things that had to occur biochemically, not just morphologically within an animal, but the things that had to change biochemically, he may have well changed his mind as far as the origins of life are concerned. But he freely admitted during his life that he had no proof of force theory.
I've always wondered, too, that with the theory of evolution, if we evolve from a chronological order of species, why the species that we evolved from is still around? Because you would think that they would be gone, but they're not. And when I looked at that, I said, this just can't be right.
Well, but you're exactly right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, we see species that are becoming extinct. We're losing species. I've never seen a new species or a new kind. Again, I want to use the word kind to be specific. So we see animals becoming extinct, but you do make a good point. If man came from apes, why are there still apes around? I don't have a good explanation for that, but you do make a very good point, and that goes down to all the other animals as well.
The theory itself, the evolutionary theory, tell us why you believe it's flawed.
Well, first and foremost, like I said, there's the fossil record doesn't support it. You think about it. If it takes millions of years for evolution to occur, and that's what the evolutionists say, and it's certainly what Darwin said, then there should be ample amount of transitional forms found in the fossil record. And there's very, very little. In fact, every time you hear an evolutionist say, oh, there's thousands of transitional forms, and I've heard that before, especially for our evolutionists that are defending teaching evolution in school and leaving intelligent design out, they'll say, well, no, there's thousands of transitional forms found in the records, the fossil record. There's really not. What they're referring to, again, is variation in kind. They're not seeing transitional forms where, let's say, a fish becomes a mammal. There's those transitional forms are lacking. So first and foremost, That's a major reason where it's flawed. And so when you see examples of this, you'll see the trilobites and you'll see bacteria and you'll see the finches, et cetera, et cetera. But we're talking about, once again, we're talking about evolution, if you want to use that word, in kinds, not in a new species or new kind. But besides that, to me, probably the best evidence that evolution is flawed is just looking at the DNA molecule itself. When you look at the DNA molecule, how would that molecule have just suddenly begun from random chemical processes? Because evolution requires that that occurs in evolution is a random process. There's no direction for that to occur. So the evolutionists don't really have a good explanation for how the DNA molecule would have come about. And the DNA molecule itself, of course, a fascinating molecule. Proteins are assembled because of the way the DNA molecule is constructed, and where you have the nitrogen bases forming together, and always adenine with guanine and cytosine with thymine. Those nitrogen bases are always paired together. Those nitrogen bases are the way proteins are constructed, but there has to be information conveyed from the nitrogen bases for those proteins to be constructed. In other words, protein is made up of amino acids. Amino acids are coded in the DNA. It takes three of the nitrogen bases to make that code. Then those amino acids have to be strung together to make a protein, and most proteins have a minimum of 100 amino acids. So when you look at a protein, for example, that has 150 amino acids, the likelihood of that occurring by chance goes to 10 to the 195th power. That's a very, very big number.
Sure is.
In fact, there's only 10 to the 69th power atoms in our galaxy. So I look at the DNA molecule. I look how remarkable the DNA molecule is, and I can't imagine how that could have occurred randomly by chance. And then once again, even if it did occur randomly by chance, then you've got to have the coding for the proteins. And how did that occur? How did that occur randomly? And even evolutionists don't have a good explanation for that.
So what about scientists who still think that the evolutionary process is the correct way? Why don't they change?
I think in a nutshell, the reason they don't change is, and this may sound kind of like a crazy answer, but they just cannot. Admittedly, if evolution did not occur and there is direction on how life began, direction implies a higher being. And scientists don't want to accept that. They don't want to accept the idea that the supernatural, if you want to use that term, might have been somehow responsible for how life began. So it's just a matter of that the only quote-unquote scientific explanation for life right now is a materialistic explanation, and the only explanation for that is evolution. And because of that, I think they're blinded. It's sort of like someone being colorblind. They're just colorblind. They cannot see any other mechanism. Therefore, evolution is accepted. And it's not because of evolution. To me, evolution is just as much science as materialism is. But it's a science that requires then the concept that there might have been an intelligent design behind it all.
Now, when you talk about evolution and the fact that it's flawed, do you take it straight through to the human beings, or do we leave them out? Do we talk about them as being more, as you have said, supernatural, more godlike created, but that everything up to a human evolution may have occurred? Or is it just the entire theory?
I think it's the entire theory. I don't think there's, again, the transitional forms that have to be there for the fish to become a mammal or amphibian, they're just not there. We don't see change in kind. There's a wide variation in kind, as I'm sure our listeners understand. For example, if we just look at the bear family, there's the polar bear, there's the grizzly bear, there's the black bear. There's a lot of different kind of bears.
Yeah.
But you don't see bears becoming feline. You don't see them becoming lions or tigers or cheetahs or that sort of thing. So I think it does extend to the entire an entire family of animals. Now, clearly, there's something different about human beings. The Bible says human beings were given a soul. They were made in the likeness of God, and I believe they're distinct. Now, God did use the DNA molecule to create all life, no doubt about that, humans included, obviously. So we are flesh. Humankind is definitely flesh, and there are similarities in flesh as a result of that. But I think humans were giving something different than the animals were given, and I think the Bible delineates that. And I think that's one reason that humans have the ability to discover. We have the ability. God has given us this intellect, this ability to discover things and discover how the processes that God put in place at the very beginning, how those processes occur.
Well, I think it's refreshing to hear a scientist, a doctor like you, talking about stuff like this. I wish more doctors or more scientists would do that. They hold back.
Well, I think there's a lot of scientists that do hold to the intelligent design, but they're really afraid to say it. I call them closet creationists, and their academic standing, it could be in significant jeopardy if they let on at all that they were that they believed in an intelligent design. And in fact, scientists have been chastised and have been fired from their jobs, have not received tenure because of that very reason. And even having said that, there are a lot of scientists that do publicly speak out and let people know that they believe in intelligent design. But I think there's a lot more out there than you and I know. And as far as physicians are concerned, I think it's the same thing. You wouldn't go around the lunchroom in medical school like I did maybe and say that you believed in creation, you didn't believe in evolution, because you'd be considered, well, I'll put it this way. Richard Dawkins, probably the greatest atheist of our time, said you had to be either stupid or insane to not believe in evolution. So where would that leave you if you didn't believe in it?
The title is The Evolution Delusion. Our guest is Dr. Bo Kirkwood. And, Doctor, tell us about the title, The Evolution Delusion.
Well, it's a little bit of a play on words because, again, Richard Dawkins wrote a book called The God Delusion years ago. And that's the reason for the title. The reason for the delusion is, I think, as I've stated, I think we've been deluded into thinking that evolution is science and that it is fact. You repeat something over and over. If you hear something over and over and over and over again, it begins to feel like it has to be fact, or people wouldn't be saying that. And I think that's where we're deluded. There's very little, again, hard science to prove evolution. And so hence the word delusion. I think we have been deluded as a result of that.
In Darwin's day, were there a number of people educated people who agreed with him?
Yes and no. There was a number that did agree with him, but there was a lot that did not. Louis Agassiz here in the United States, a professor of Harvard in anatomy, did not agree with Darwin. A lot of the anatomists at his day did not agree with Darwin because they understood the implications. They understood that the scientific record didn't show it. They just looked at the typological model, which delineates species, shows that there's a distinct. That's how we delineate species. There's a distinct area where those species are different and change. So a lot of the scientists did not accept evolution at the time. Now, Darwin lived at the time, or right after the time of the Enlightenment, where people were looking for scientific answers. So when his book came out, it allowed people to start thinking a little bit differently. People weren't looking at necessarily God for the answer. So a lot of scientists, and especially Thomas Huxley, who became what was known as Darwin's bulldog, began to accept what Darwin was saying. And by the way, Darwin wasn't really the first person to come up with the idea of mutability within species. There were people before him, even his grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, who was also a physician, by the way, had spoke of the idea that species might be able to change.
Hold on for a second, Doctor. We're going to hit the break, but we'll come right back as we talk about the evolution delusion. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Bo Kirkwood. He's written other books, too, Unveiling the Da Vinci Code and A Case for Life as well. Where do you find so much time to write, Doctor?
You know what? That's the question all my patients ask. Well, I stay busy, but when if I'm watching a football game on TV, I'm reading something, and I do a lot of traveling, and I'm reading something, but I find plenty of time to do it.
Oh, that's great. Now, I'm having a difficult time comprehending what science has told us, that little organisms, single cells, became two, became three, multiplied, and all of a sudden, here's everything. I have a difficult time getting that. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. And the evolution, for example, assumes a gene. Well, what happened before there was genes? Supposedly evolution occurred because of mutations that occurred within genes, but you've got to have a gene for something to mutate to begin with. And besides, mutations don't generally produce favorable outcomes. They produce unfavorable outcomes. So, yeah, I have a very hard time getting around that idea as well.
And then I look at the creatures, the animals, the fish life, the human life on this planet. It's the only planet we have to look at right now with this kind of life. But however it was put together, it was genius. I mean, you've got eyes to see, a nose to smell, a mouth to open and eat, you've got ears to hear. I mean, does this just happen by accident?
No, I don't believe it does. I believe there's design involved in all those things you just mentioned. The Michael Behe years ago came up with the idea or the term irreducible complexity. For evolution to occur, again, small steps must occur. But you think about it. He uses in that book the clotting cascade. How can, there's at least 10 factors that are involved in the clotting of the body. If one of those factors is not there, the organism bleeds to death. It doesn't survive. Well, the big question is, how do you get to the tenth or the 12th factor? If one of those three was missing to begin with, you would have had bleeding, the organism bleeding to death before you got to the 12th clotting factor. In my book, I talk about the endocrine system, for example. The endocrine system is made up of the hypothalamus, which sends signals into the pituitary, then sends signals to the various organs that our body uses to function. For example, the thyroid gland. The thyroid gland is our gland that determines our metabolism. Well, the thyroid gland is dependent on a message from the pituitary, which is dependent upon a message from the hypothalamus. What's the hypothalamus there for if there's no thyroid gland to begin with? It's a complex mechanism. It's irreducibly complex, as Michael Behe put it. And so those things just, to me, don't happen by chance. It doesn't even make sense.
The Cambrian explosion occurred about 542 million years ago, where life just seemed to pop up all over the place. How do we explain that?
I explain it through intelligent design. Now, the Cambrian layer, there's a pre-Cambrian layer where there's a few animals that have been discovered, but they look nothing like the Cambrian layer. If you look at the Cambrian layer itself, there's 23 distinct animal phyla that are found there. And here's the deal. There's no predecessors. There's no organisms that mutated, that turned into the animals that we see in those 23 phyla. And those 23 phyla are very distinct animals. They all look quite different. Probably the most well known is the trilobite. And the trilobite looks like a miniature horseshoe crab. It's a very complex animal. It's got eyes, it's got ribs, it's got gills. It's a very, very complex animal. There's no pre-trilobites in the fossil evidence. They're not there. So how did these animals get there to begin with? Now the evolutionists, they come up with an idea. They say, well, maybe it was transgression, regression that occurred. In other words, we washed out their predecessors, and we just can't find them now. It kind of goes back to Darwin's argument. Well, the fossils are there, we just haven't found them yet. And then the other argument was, well, maybe it's because the predecessors, their bodies were too soft. They had soft biota. Well, that's been shot down because we found fossil evidence of bacteria, and they certainly have soft biota. The dilemma's there for the evolutionists. They kind of make fun of the Cambrian explosion. They call it the, quote, so-called Cambrian explosion, but they really don't have an explanation for it. Their explanations are really all just ad hoc explanations. They're negative explanations. But here's the other thing. The Cambrian explosion, of course, was supposedly 530 million years ago, but if you look at the geologic column, there had to be explosions in every geologic column because, once again, there's no transitional forms to be found there. So my explanation is there had to be an intelligence behind it all. These animals could not have just popped up on their own and without any predecessors, and there's no evidence that they did.
Would this intelligence also be on other planets that might be similar to planet Earth?
That I do not know. I can't answer that. I don't discount the possibility, but as far as we know so far, the planet Earth seems to be quite unique. We live in an area of the galaxy that's very unique, an area in the solar system very unique that allows life to exist. In fact, I think one of your previous callers earlier tonight, maybe in pre-recorded, Mr. Peter Ward, has written a book, Rare Earth. He talks about those things.
Pre-recorded. But
there could be other planets that have life on them. I wouldn't discount that. But let's say they did. It doesn't discount also the idea of intelligence behind it all.
If evolution occurred, why would it occur? I mean, why would a species change? What would the purpose be?
You know, George, that's a question that I ask. I ask it in my book. I call it the why question. Why would evolution, evolution is treated as if we personify evolution, the scientists do. You hear them talking about it all the time. Evolution does this. Evolution does that. Evolution doesn't do anything. Evolution is supposed to be random. Everything's by chance. So that does bring up the big question. Why would it have occurred to begin with? Now, life, what's the purpose of life? The physicists, believe it or not, think they have an answer to that. They think that life is an intermediary that allows entropy to continue to expand. That's nonsense. That's no answer at all. But you're exactly right. Why would what's the purpose? Why would evolution occur? I don't know what their answer is for that.
I mean, if I didn't use, for example, my left arm, and every human being did not use their left arm, would we eventually have humans with no left arms?
No. That's the old Lamarckian idea, and Darwin held to some of that. Lamarck believed that you could inherit changes in the organism. In other words, if you cut off someone's arm, their progeny may be born without arms. And no, you would still have your left arm. Not using it would not keep you from having a left arm.
That's what I thought, too. So it's a perplexing situation. Yet I always come back to this incredible design. I don't know what the design is, Doctor. I mean, I wish I had the answers. I'm sure you wish you had the answers. I know there's more to this. It's bigger than we think. But I just can't figure out exactly what it is. Have you gotten close to getting an answer?
No, not really. I don't know why God chose to design animals and mankind the way that he did. I believe God is the intelligent design behind it all. Why did he choose to use DNA? Why did he choose to use the particular design that we have? I don't have an answer for that. I think the scripture that talks about we are made in the likeness of God is not talking about our physical body. It's talking about our spiritual body. That's not the likeness. I don't perceive God as having, eyes and arms and hands. I don't see that at all. But why he chose the design that he did, I don't know.
You kind of.
But it is remarkable. The human genome, the genome of all the animals that have now been discovered. In my lifetime, I never thought that would occur. But they did discover the human genome in 2003. They deciphered the code through the use of computers, and we understand more and more. The more we learn about the design, to me, the more it supports the concept of intelligent design. There's an intelligence behind it.
Why do the schools seem to want to push evolution, Darwinism, and not intelligent design?
I believe they don't want the idea of religion to creep into the schools. I think that's what's behind it. And they're very passionate about it, as I'm sure you know.
Oh, sure.
In fact, the American Civil Liberties Union, you would think they would be in favor of freedom of speech, but they're actually antagonistic towards it. And they just don't want the idea of religion to creep into the schools. Now, I think intelligent design crosses all religious barriers, you know, from Judaism to Christianity to Buddhism to Muslim to Islam, the whole gamut. So you can't say intelligent design is per se religious, but the evolutionists believe it is, and they've had the support of the government. Unfortunately, the famous ruling that occurred in Little Rock, William Overton decided to define science. But when he defines science, he didn't define science, he defines naturalism. He says that science has to be natural, and all explanations have to be natural. And that's what is in our schools now. So since intelligent design is not quote-unquote natural, it's not allowed to be taught. And, you know, God forbid somebody try to get it in the school. Here in Texas, ever so often, I'm sure this happens in other states, debate on whether intelligent design should be allowed in the textbooks. And a couple of years ago, there were some professors at Rice University and Southern Methodist University that seemed to get all bent out of shape just that the idea of intelligent design would be even mentioned in the book. They're very aggressive, and I just believe they don't want the idea of religion into the schools.
Do you have to be spiritual in order to accept the theory of intelligent design?
No, I don't think you do. I am, and I think most people probably are. But you can look at intelligent design because the evidence is there. You know, the likelihood of these things coming together is astronomically low, and you have to throw away logic to believe that it all came about by chance. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be spiritual to believe in intelligent design. But I think most people are that do believe it.
What would you like people to walk away from after reading The Evolution Delusion?
I think what people will walk away from is that evolution is a philosophy. It's not science. There's not hard science. Although it sounds scientific, it sounds like it's an elegant theory. And intuitively, it does seem to make a little bit of sense because of similarity between a lot of animals. Animals all have eyes and four legs and lungs and hearts, and the elegance behind it has said that it's an exquisite, elegant theory. And from that point of view, he's right. It is elegant, but it's not scientific. The science is not behind it. It is a philosophical approach, and it's not science. And that's what I would hope they would get out of my book. And I hope that when they would read it, they would see that I present enough data to make a convincing argument for that.
And Doctor, when we talk about intelligent design, are we talking about God, or are we talking about some consciousness that might exist in the universe?
An intelligence, obviously, whether it be a consciousness or an intelligent being, something that has infinitely more intelligence than we have here on the earth, and someone that transcends time. Whatever has created us, and again, I, being a Christian, I believe it's the God of the Old Testament, the God of the New Testament, manifested through His Son Jesus Christ. But intelligent design implies a higher source of some sort that transcends time, transcends our finite intelligence that mankind has here.
Will we ever get the answer? That's the $64,000 question. What do you think?
The answer to whether evolution is true?
Or not.
I think there's plenty of evidence to show that we've got an answer right now, that evolution doesn't make any sense. And, you know, even the evolutionists are understanding now that there's a problem in their theory. So we have these new theories popping up that say, well, we realize there's not enough time. Evolution couldn't have occurred the way Darwin said it could occur. Therefore, there has to be another reason. So they come up with punctuated evolution, where we see species becoming new species without going through all those mutations. To me, it's silliness. That's all it is. It doesn't make any sense. but they're trying to come up with another explanation. So, you know, in my mind, I'm convinced that there's no way evolution, the way Darwin put it and the neo-Darwinists put it, could have occurred. And, you know, people have looked at the DNA molecule in the human genome, and that's another topic altogether, but and looked at the genome trying to prove that evolution occurred, and yet the genome itself actually proves opposite.
I was going to say there's no connection there. When you look at the genome factor and DNA, you other than, you know, saying chromosomes are different here and there, there's something missing there. And I can't see the evolutionary pattern to get to the human being, for example, assuming we're on the top of the food chain here.
Well, the evolutionists, the scientists behind it all, when the human genome was discovered in 2003, they were quote-unquote surprised. And there's one thing they were surprised about, that it was how little of the genome, how little of the DNA was actually used in protein production. Only about 1.5% of the DNA, representing something like 20,000 to 25,000 genes, was used in protein production. So they said, well, the other, you know, 95%, the other 99% or 98.5% had to be junk DNA left over from evolution. And then they looked at similar genes within animals, like these so-called jumping genes, where, for example, there's strands of DNA in the mouse that are similar to human beings. And then they looked at the chimpanzee and say, hey, we're 96% identical. What does that prove? It goes back to the old homology argument. There is similarity. God used DNA to produce us, so there would be similarity. But then they also found out, and what we're finding out now, is that although 1.5% of DNA is used in protein production, there's a lot more uses of DNA than just protein production, a lot more uses. There is no such thing as junk DNA. So there. When the genome was discovered, they thought they had killed the creation, the intelligent design idea, but actually they did not.
If you think biblically that God created Adam and Eve, Adam first, Eve second, could that be a story based on what evolution should be, or are we actually dealing with something supernatural like that?
I think we're dealing with something supernatural. I think the story of Adam and Eve is the story of humankind and how humankind was created. You know, that's my personal belief.
And that may be the belief.
Yeah.
That may be the. What will it take, Doctor, to get people totally convinced that evolution just isn't what it's supposed to be?
I think the first thing they have to do is open their mind. And that's unfortunately going to be very difficult, because in public schools don't allow even the hint of intelligent design to occur. And so the very first thing is to open their mind. And obviously there are some people that you are just never going to convince. I mean, they've bought into the naturalistic theory.
Yeah.
If it's not naturalism, they're not going to accept it. You are never going to convince that person. And my book is really not written for that individual, because if they don't have an open mind, they'll shoot down everything they can in that book and come up with these ad hoc reasons for not believing it. But if you have someone that that has an open mind and can and look at the scientific data, forget the religious implications right now, just look at the scientific data, I think they can learn that evolution is philosophical. You can believe it if you want to or not, but just understand it's philosophical. And you know, the idea is that if you don't believe in evolution, again, you're either stupid or you're ignorant or you're insane. And there's a lot of very, very, very smart, intelligent people that don't buy into the evolutionary theory.
All right, we're going to come back and have a final hour of phone calls with you, Dr. Bo Kirkwood, the book The Evolution Delusion. Give us your thoughts when you check in.